Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined by fellow monk Alex, who has agreed to be with us this afternoon to talk about the role of food in spiritual practice, in Zen awareness practice, and specifically some of the changes that we've made here at the monastery around food in the last 6 or 8 months or so, to kind of talk about some of the what's and the hows and whys around that. So welcome, Alex.
Hey, thanks, Jen. Appreciate you inviting me.
So I thought it might be fun to just start by, it's obvious to us because we live here and to people who come on retreat and that sort of thing, but always a good reminder to touch back in, what is the importance of food in the role of practice and Zen awareness and that sort of thing? So maybe we could start there.
Well, the importance of food in spiritual practice. We talk about everything really being important in spiritual practice, and food is pretty much another facet of something that we have in our lives, as much as the air that we breathe and, you know, the resources that we use to, you know, run the monastery and everything that we we have in our care. And part of it is, on a very tangible level, you know, the body that we dwell in, something that we sometimes take for granted, and we tend not to give it rest. We tend not to give it nourishing food. We don't give it enough water sometimes or exercise. So it's all part of, you know, what we look at and spiritual practice.
If I just interrupt you for one moment, I love that image of the body that we dwell in and how often we forget that it's not mine. We say, it seems so close to me. surely it's mine and I can do what I want with it. But that reminder that it's not at all. It's a gift. It's the thing that sort of the vehicle, if you will, that we're going around in this consciousness, and how food is such a tangible way of nourishing it and really bringing a lot of consciousness to what we put into it.
It's another thing that we have the opportunity to care for. And so part of what I'm looking at it with it is that the menu has developed over time. And what we're practicing with now is a menu that Sherry created, and I think it's absolutely fabulous. It's based on the concept of simple foods, really getting down to the nitty-gritty of things. I mean, our food has always been healthy to a certain level, but I think that it's really gone to a new level. I think the simplicity of it really allows the flavors of things to just really shine through. Like, who would ever suspect that, you know, just a simple cooked grain like millet together with a bean or legume like lentils together would just create such a fabulous meal. I mean, and then we have a salad that goes along with it that has spinach with beautiful ingredients like apples and sesame seeds and a curried dressing, and then just to throw it over the top, we have simple baked yams that go along with it that just simply cut in half, baked for 400 degrees for an hour, and wow, you would think it was quick candy.
You know, it's funny that you lay that out, because that's actually one of my very favorite meals that we have, and I'm actually not a big raw spinach person, but just what I love about what you're saying is that the way the meals are put together, it's not just let's see, what grain are we going to have and what bean and, you know, but really taking care with, well, what legume does go with this grain and what rounds it out protein-wise, what rounds it out color-wise. I mean, one of the things that's so beautiful about that meal you're talking about is that orange of the yams on top of that green spinach and the, you know, the lentils are that muted color, and it's such a beautiful combination on the plate. The tastes are beautiful, and I really appreciated your point, too, of that I think so often, you know, in this culture in so many ways, and certainly in food, it's like more sugar, more salt. I want to taste it more. And when you start stripping those things away, you begin to actually taste the foods, and the foods themselves are so, you have such a beautiful flavor all by themselves.
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned that, the way they're all combined, because even with that meal, the flavors are all like just such ranges, you know, the pungency of the, you know, the dressing, and the, you know, the yams are so sweet and the lentils taste almost meaty-like, you know, so it's just a, it's just really fabulous, and you could probably tell I'm pretty excited about our menu. And you know, it's interesting because as the menu has developed, we've focused more on the foods themselves rather than such things like you know, they're not so heavy in dairy or soy as they used to be, and we've actually started making all of our breads with spelt flour, which is an ancient wheat. It's not completely gluten-free, but it is lower in gluten, and it's got lots more protein and all of them. Like even this, the quick breads, you know, like the banana bread is made with spelt flour. So I don't know, it's just something about it makes them more like meals, and everything is just so well-rounded. And boy, we could talk about the food forever, and I know part of what I wanted to look at too was how the kitchen has undergone some systems changes too, like things to structurally make it easier to operate. Folks probably are aware of the role that Schwinney plays in the organization, but you know, now we have Excel spreadsheets for when we go shopping, which brings a whole new level to just someone sitting down with a paper and pen and recreating all the ingredients we need for the shopping list week after week after week.
It's funny, isn't it? When you just said that, what occurred to me was, you know, Excel spreadsheets, that doesn't usually conjure up images of simplicity. And yet, what I love about practice is there's no sense of, no, we don't do Excel spreadsheets because that's going to complicate things. There's a looking to see. And in this case, what those spreadsheets do, which is so beautiful, is they really do simplify things. So we can just, with the press of a button, say, well, we're having this many people this time, so populate it with that, instead of manually someone having to go around and do the same thing each time. And so I really, that's a really good point. And then also the systems of cooking, how we're cooking as a team. All the monks show up for a certain period of the day and cook together, and how much can get done in those short periods of time. Again, kind of just the simplicity of it, and then all going on to the next task.
Yeah, I love that. It's like actually making it simple, because part of it, when you said that, it just reminded me of our schedule that we follow, that it's, there's nothing spiritual or whatever like about showing up at the same time every day for meditation. But in a way, it is. You just take the conditioning out of it. There's, you know, we still have to pay attention, which is the part I love. It's not like the Excel spreadsheet pops out the exact numbers and we just go to town and shop. We go around and look around to see what's in the pantry, what ingredients need to be used up first, and so we take all that into account. So it is very much like everything else that we do. It's not a simple formula, but it does allow us not to have to recreate the wheel every week over and over again. So I just love that part about it, that it allows us to focus on other things in practice that we can offer, because we are just a small band of merry monks.
One of the things that I love about that sort of symbolic of the, you were talking before about the simplicity of the food in the sense of, you know, it's grains and it's beans, it's legumes. We have a lot of great salads. You know, everything's organic. And when you look in the pantry, you can see that. One of the monks who was cooking when we first started making these changes had the, I thought, brilliant idea of buying mason jars, glass mason jars, to store all the grains and the beans and to label them. And so you look in the pantry and realize, wow, there's almost nothing we buy that's in a package. So it's all just stuff that's grown. And we buy it in bulk whenever possible, so that, you know, that's a much better way packaging-wise and all that to buy it. And then it just goes into these beautiful jars, and just jars themselves with all those colors and the different labels and the grains and the beans in them. That's a work of art all in itself.
Yeah, and as you were saying that most of our things don't have packages, it's like I'm watching us go out into the garden and harvest pounds and pounds of kale, and I just love that part about it, that the food we eat is becoming more of something that we can actually see its origins of. The part I love about what we're doing in the kitchen is that, I don't know if anyone else knows, but California has not received as much rain as elsewhere. And part of what we're doing is taking water that we're collecting from basins that we use to wash our dishes with, and wash, you know, veggies and everything we use water for in the kitchen. Another stroke of genius is that that credit Sherry to is that we're collecting that water that would normally just go down the drain and putting it into buckets on the back porch and watering the plants that we grow in our garden with it. And it's just a nice symbiotic relationship between the kitchen and the food we grow and the food we eat and the food we care for and clean. It just reminds me so much of that Dogon quote that we have up in the kitchen about, you know, we must care for each grain of rice as though they were our children. And once it's cooked, it's like our we treat it as our eyesight. It's just everything is related, and we must care for it as everything else.
Really nice. So, Alex, we're coming up against the clock. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on or mention before we end?
Just one simple thing is that come and join us for lunch, dinner, and breakfast. We'd love to see you. We'd love to serve you this great food.
It's interesting because, you know, each retreat has a curriculum, and it's about the exercises that we do and all that, and yet all the things that happen on retreat, you know, your accommodation and what you eat, and it's all a really, really important part of it. So that's a great point. Come and eat with us. All right. Thank you so much, Alex.
Thank you very much, Jen. Have a great show.
All right, Michael. So I guess we'll start the show, huh?
Okay. Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Jen, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Jen.
Thanks, Michael. Good to be here.
Thank you for that lovely conversation. That was fun.
That was neat, wasn't it? It's funny. I know that it's something I really enjoyed this last few months, but I just realized when I was talking to Alex how much it lights me up, just that I just the relationship of food to practice and how much what we're doing in the kitchen symbolizes the deepening of practice that's happening everywhere. It's really nice.
Yes, and as you said that, I just get a picture, as you were saying a minute ago, of coming on retreat, and everywhere that I turn, I encounter things that have been lovingly cared for.
Yes, and
But, you know, my hermitage, the meditation hall, the dining room is clean, the shoe racks are organized, the food is beautiful. It's all trying to give me one message. You know, life is beautiful, I'm fine, it's all good.
Yeah, and you know, it's such a good point, and it's why everything is important, because it all represents that. It all represents the possibility of waking up and ending suffering, of being here, of being in care, of caring for everything, of everything as the Buddha. And so we can't have some things that are important and other things that aren't. And it's really the core of the training that we receive from Sherry, and that each of us, you know, is learning to embody, is that everything matters. Everything matters. And what a joy it is to live in that place.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful that you and the monks and the monastery and practice is there to remind me of that and to model that. You know, it doesn't need to be talked about. It's just modeled, and it becomes obvious.
Yeah. Well, and as you say that, just the gratitude for the thousands of people around the country and the world who want to participate in that. I mean, that's very moving.
Yes. Very beautiful.
For example, all the lovely people who call into this show.
Yes, I can see them there right now. And the ones who've called for 10 years. Beautiful.
Yeah, really amazing. Yep.
And all of our listeners and all who listen on the archives and we go on and on.
Yeah. So many people come on retreat who, you know, as far as we're concerned, they're brand new to practice. Never seen them before, never heard their name, but they've been listening to the archives for years.
Yes.
So it's a huge part of their day. They listen to it on their way to work. They, you know, jog with it. It's amazing.
Yeah. Wonderful. And I have some announcements here.
Okay.
We have a new retreat on the schedule. It's called Your Practice. And it's designed for those who've been with practice for a while and gives participants the opportunity to practice as a monk for a week.
Which is really fun. The visiting monk program, people coming for a month, is getting rave reviews. And, you know, not everyone can do that. Take a month out of their lives and come and participate in monastic practice in that way. So this is a really great alternative for people who still want to do that.
Yes, and the first one is coming up mid-July, 18th through 25th.
Great.
And then in August, we have the Not What But How retreat with Sherry, Ashwini, and Justin. And this retreat's a fun way to learn more about using the tools of practice. And it's great for both newcomers and those who've been around practice for a while.
Yep, really good. The basic tools of practice. It's an excellent retreat for that.
Yes, and folks can visit schedule.livingcompassion.org to read more or to sign up.
Great.
And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. So let's get started.
All right.
First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Jen. This is Jen.
Jen, how are you?
Hello. I'm very well. I just wanted to call to participate. I just have a commitment to call, and it felt kind of like everything that you were just talking about, how everything matters. It just felt like it was bringing everything together because I was getting a lot from conditioning tonight about, you know, I don't have anything clever to say. I don't have a great story to share. I can't call in, and I should wait until there's, you know, a better time. But I just felt like, no, I have the commitment. I don't want to get talked into, you know, wait until some other time. And it was kind of that, like, okay, this matters. This person has made a commitment to show up, and I'm going to not just go do some other project tonight. I'm going to sit down and get quiet and get on the phone and really participate in the show.
Yep, that's exactly it, isn't it? And to take that attitude of mind, that strategy into our entire lives, wow.
Yeah, wow.
Truly,
yeah.
You know, because, of course, conditioning wants to talk us into, well, I have to feel a certain way, or as you say, I have to have a certain sort of something interesting to talk about, or which is what it does across the board, right? It's constantly in a campaign to, well, I can't do that now because I don't feel the right way. I need to feel a certain way in order to do that. And to realize that's the whole point of commitment, and it's why commitment is such a powerful tool in practice. No, we just make the commitment, and then we keep it. And then we get to see everything that happens around that.
Yeah, it's perfect. I'm so grateful to hear you say that, and I'm so grateful to the part of me that showed up, because the voices were really, you know, yelling and screaming like, oh, this is just the worst time. You have nothing worth saying. You know, you really need to do this another night. You could get so much work done. I mean, there were so many, you know, compelling reasons being thrown at me, but I'm really glad to just show up and, as you say, get to see all of that. And then get to be here and feel like, wonderful, I'm participating and I'm getting, you know, these wonderful reminders from being a part of Sangha, like what you just said, that's, I'm looking at that in every aspect of my life, how to keep those commitments and how I get talked out of it. So it's perfect.
Yeah, it is perfect. So you get to have that process mirrored. And, you know, you also get the experience having seen through the resistance and chosen not to go with it and keeping the commitment anyway. It's like you've strengthened that muscle that much more. You've had the experience of, oh, wow, I don't have to feel a certain way or have a certain thing to talk about to keep my commitment. I just keep it. And then you see all the benefits that come from that, which for me so assists the next time I'm in that situation. And pretty soon, you know, the balances are tipping so that more and more I have so much experience on the side of keeping my commitments is really what I want to do, that even when conditioning really comes at us with the big stuff, there's still that sense, that memory, that experience of, no, you know what, this is really the thing that I want to do. I really want to keep this commitment. It's the thing that will benefit the being the most.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. That feels just so good. And, you know, as I said, there's a million different places of content that I could plug that into, but yeah, just getting to have, you know, one more chance, like you said, to strengthen that muscle instead of making that other choice for conditioning. It's just really exciting. I can't quite see it right yet or something, but I think, you know, I've been looking so much as we've been encouraged to, I guess, in practice, there's been so much of really how to listen to life and letting life guide the life and all of that. And it feels like somehow keeping the commitments is really a part of that, like, showing up. Yeah, it's like if I show up for the commitment, that's my best chance for life to be able to come through. But boy, if I go off with the conditioning and why I can't keep the commitment, I probably don't have a chance at all of connecting with what life might have had there for me.
Yeah, that's a really great point. Because what I saw when you were saying that was that who is going to decide that, well, actually tonight I don't think it's the right night to call into the show after all. You know, who's going to make that decision? Where is that guidance going to come from? That's very shaky.
And so, yes.
Not needing to have that conversation. I forget, it was something Michael was saying in that when we were just talking a minute ago, but that same, just, you don't need to have a conversation about it. You just know this is your commitment. This is what you're going to do. And as you say, getting out of that conversation with conditioned mind is the thing that gives us access to life's guidance, to where life may want to lead.
Yeah, this feels so fun and so like a chance to really see that, because I was really kind of in the panic of like, oh, this is really stupid to call. I've got nothing to, you know, I was really kind of believing that even as I've been on hold and dialing and all of that. And then it feels like just showing up and being here, like this is such a wonderful conversation that's so helpful to my practice anyway, for sure. And you know, when it's like life is there showing me, you know, here you go, here's the next thing. Yeah. Like life is there offering it because I showed up for the commitment or something. I can't quite say it, but yeah, it's really exciting.
Yeah, yeah, I'm seeing the edges of it too. It's something around really building that sort of trust. So there's conditioning over there. Oh my gosh, this is, you really shouldn't do this. You know, you have nothing to say, blah, blah, blah. But instead just going, all right, life, this is my commitment, I'm calling in, and then discovering, wow, there's this whole great conversation that was there to be had by calling in that conditioning tried to talk me out of.
Yes, like I wouldn't have gotten to have this if I just went and did whatever conditioning was going to tell me to. Yeah, it's just something really sweet about that, and I'm so grateful because, like I said, I've been kind of, I get into these stories of like, I don't understand how to listen to life. What does this mean? And somehow it feels like, well, a piece of it is showing up for these commitments, and that's really fun to look at.
And of course that person who's trying to figure it out, what does that mean, right? That's the static that gets in the way of just discovering the spirit of inquiry of what does it look like to listen to life?
Yes, yeah, and just sort of showing up for the next commitment and seeing what life might have to say there or whatever, yeah.
Exactly, yeah, that's really fun.
Wow, yeah, that's so fun. Well, I'm very glad that I showed up, so thank you so much.
Thanks, Jen.
Yeah, thank you. Have a great night. Bye-bye.
Thanks, you too.
Thanks for joining us, Jen. You're listening to Open Air. And we have another caller, Jen.
Excellent.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
This is Rochelle from Charlotte.
Hey, Rochelle.
Hi.
You made it home safely.
I made it home safely, yeah. For those who don't know, I spent a month as a visiting monk. In May, and so I'm calling just to kind of touch base and follow up. I have a commitment to call, but also I'm kind of practicing like my hair is on fire to avoid backlash, and so.
Good for you. Excellent. Good for you. Wow. I'll bet the voices had something to say about calling in tonight.
Oh, yeah. It's like you just left 2 weeks ago. Why are you calling, you know, really trying to distract me from not practicing, and my response when I hear them say don't do something is, of course, to go ahead and do it. There have been a couple of things that I've noted since I left the monastery that have been an effect of being at the monastery and spending the month there. And it is so interesting to see how life just puts things together. I called to talk about how my stay has changed my relationship or how I think about food.
Oh, my gosh, how funny.
You and Alex talking about food.
I love it.
And I mean, it's eerie how it works out that way.
Yeah.
I enjoy the food.
You enjoy the food, is that what you said?
I would not enjoy a vegetarian diet. I wouldn't enjoy simple food. I loved it.
Yeah.
Not only that, I loved preparing it and seeing and witnessing the thought process and the attention and concentration given to what we eat.
Yeah, you really, that's fun. You got to do all sides of it, didn't you?
Washing vegetables. I mean, everything was organic and freshly picked. I mean, you know, it was picked from the garden that day. We ate it at lunch or we ate it at dinner.
Yeah.
And I used to think there were things that I didn't like. And with that experience, it's not that I don't like them. I just like freshly prepared salads, things like that. The taste is different.
Yeah.
And one of the things that really boggled me coming home was trying to figure out what to eat in the airport.
Me too. Oh, I'm right there. Talk about a panic. I'm going to starve.
Yeah, and even a simple salad, I'm like, oh, my gosh, what in the world is this? After having fresh picked salad, you know, greens and kale and spinach and butternut squash soup and all the wonderful things, I just didn't like the food. And I came to the conclusion that what I don't like about a lot of foods or what has changed is I don't like unconscious food. Food is designed for you to eat it while you're not conscious. And all the conscious preparation and thought that's gone into the food that we ate there. And I've got to radically change how I eat and what I buy. And it's hard for a single person to do that.
Yeah.
But even though it's hard, it doesn't mean you don't do it.
That's right.
And I have gone to the farmer's market, and I learned some things at the monastery about, you know, planning and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I had for lunch a spinach salad with pears and all nuts. So, I mean, and stuff, and it's and I've got butternut squash in my refrigerator. I didn't even know what a butternut squash was before I went to the monastery. It is wonderful. And so it was interesting listening to you and Alex talk about all the thought and the preparation that goes in planning the meals and being there firsthand and being involved in, you know, the cleaning and the chopping and the putting it on the table and the care that goes into it, and bring some of that attention to what I eat, how I eat, where I shop, home has made a tremendous difference.
I just have such a big smile on my face. That's so great. It inspires me, actually. A few times in the past we've done food retreats, and as you're talking, I think, boy, it would be good to do another food retreat because everything is in it, isn't it? It just illustrates every bit of this.
So much of my eating had been done unconsciously, in the car going to work, in the car coming back, or something quick because I was too tired to cook.
Yeah.
And yet eating sustains our life, and so much of it was done unconsciously.
And actually, you know, then we can think, oh, gosh, you know, the voices will be on us about, look at you, you're not even appreciating, you're just eating quickly. But to realize, oh, it's for me. The joy of slowing down and actually taking time to chew your food, to eat the meal quietly, to not be watching television, to not be reading, to not be driving, whatever it is, we're the ones who receive so much from that.
Yeah, well, to be honest, a lot of times I didn't think about what I ate, and what I ate was driven by hunger and time and necessity. And one thing at the monastery that I noticed is I was not hungry.
Mm.
A lot of times, like I've gone through hungry and eating, you know, high density, calorie food because I'm hungry and not even thinking about it. I mean, it was so off the radar, the conditioning wasn't even beating me up about it because I was rushing to here, there, whatever, and food was just to sustain me so I don't pass out from being so hungry. But the monastery, it's like you know, so much of our day is in preparation for the meal.
Yeah.
And the thought that goes into it.
Yeah.
You know, how many apples will we need? How many pears? I mean, it's really, you know, the forefront of thoughting. The forefront of our thoughts, what are we going to eat and what do we prepare? And, you know, make sure it's cleaned properly and refrigerated properly and things like that. And I come home and it just really, I have that consciousness about it.
Yeah, and I really appreciated your point a little while ago where you said, as a single person, it's challenging, which it is. It's living in community is a huge asset when it comes to that, to food and that sort of thing. But your point about, but it matters and you're worth it, is so big that whoever I am, this person that I have to steward kind of through this life, taking the time to plan the meals, to shop where our hearts want to shop. You know, we've been talking about that in some of the 300 for 1,000 DPAP calls of supporting that which supports our heart. So where am I going to spend the money? Where am I going to buy my groceries? You know, buying organic. And then taking the time to prepare the food and then taking the time to eat it. It's so worth it.
Oh, yeah, it is. It is. It really is. I mean, it's a lasting lesson from the monastery. It's only been 2 weeks, but what's in my refrigerator, what's in my house to eat has radically changed.
Yeah.
It's
a fun, tangible reminder of the transformation that's happening for you. You open your fridge, and there it is. There's the evidence of the transformation.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it really is. And the thought about, you know how we start preparing for lunch, you know, mid-morning.
Yeah.
I've kind of scheduled my day as part of the work thing, as part of preparing for the next meal.
Mm,
so don't wait for hunger to get in there and drag. I have what I'm going to eat for dinner ready, and I know what I'm going to eat. And so when condition says, oh, let's just grab this and let's do this. No,
yeah.
I have something prepared. It's at home.
Yeah.
It's been thought about, and this is what I'm going to eat.
Good for you. Good for you. Oh, well,
yep.
Thank you so much for calling in with that testimonial.
Well, it lined up perfectly with what you and Alex were talking about, and I was like, man, it's just like life just points consistently in that direction if you pay attention.
Yeah, so
you
true.
Know, it's
so,
really amazing.
Yep.
Well, I got to say hello to all the hardworking monks there at the monastery on the west porch, and I'm doing well, and I think someone knew that I was going with my niece to the Girl Scout 100th celebration in Washington, D.C., and had a little bit of anxiety about that, and it went well.
Oh,
and
my good.
The train helped me stay in center while we were taking about 40 girls to an event of 250,000 little Girl Scouts in D.C.
Wow.
Everybody on the metro, and I brought healthy snacks. I had apples and pears and bananas.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people think children won't eat healthy things, but if it's available, I mean, they ate every bit of it, of the healthy things. So
that's great, Rochelle. Really, really fun.
Yeah, so thank you very much. I miss the calm and the quiet, but I think I'm practicing like my hair's on fire and really trying to stay disidentified and centered and using
great.
The tools that y'all have taught me, and I greatly appreciate it.
Good for you. You know, it occurs to me that, well, I guess as Sherry's teacher used to talk about, that practice is a debt that can only be repaid with the same coin, and how the gratitude that I imagine you feel from being at the monastery is so being expressed in your practicing in your day-to-day life. It's such a beautiful way to give back. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I greatly appreciate it. Deepest gassho to all of y'all. Thank you.
Gassho returned. I hope we'll see you soon.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Good.
Bye.
Take care, Rochelle.
Thanks for joining us, Rochelle. You're listening to Open Air. Today we have the pleasure of being joined by Jen, the monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. And we have another caller, Jen.
Great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Isabel calling from California.
Hey, Isabel. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing all right. How are you?
Great, thank you.
So I'm calling in as part of a commitment I made to call every 6 weeks.
Great.
And it's just taken me a few weeks to get on, but here I am, and it's been good practice to call in each week.
Oh, that is good.
Keep me involved.
It was,
yeah.
wouldn't it, for conditioning to go, well, I mean, I tried.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. So what have you been looking at?
Well, I've really been seeing how much conditioning has taken over my practice.
Mm-hmm.
I've really been sort of struggling for months about having difficulty practicing and keeping practice commitments. And I was listening to the conversation the other night and noticing again how similar it is to the conversation around like eating the way I want to eat or exercising. And so really just seeing that now practice has become another piece of content that conditioning is using against me and that I'm not the right person.
Right, right. So when we come to practice, conditioning really has no choice but to take up that content and bring it into the same process it's always used to torture us. So it has to look a certain way, you have to do a certain thing, and if you don't, then you're the wrong person, and like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't do it, I'm the wrong person. But then all the beatings around it are so discouraging. It's like, well, then you should just give up so then you don't have to feel bad about not doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's evil, huh?
It is. Yeah. And I don't know. Honestly, I'm feeling like a little stuck. Like I'm having a hard time. I guess finding the person who wants to practice, maybe is the best way to say it.
It's interesting. I know you're a veteran of practice in many, many ways, so I know you have a recording and listening practice, yeah?
Yeah, although I haven't done that for quite a while because that was one of the first things that sort of got taken, yeah.
Yeah, and so that's not a surprise, right? On kind of both directions, not a surprise that would be something that would fall by the wayside when the resistance is getting kicked up. And then not a surprise that not doing that practice then has the slide spiral even more, yeah?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Yeah. So I'm curious if you connect into, which is why I was asking about the recordings, because I'm sure it's all over your recordings, especially early on, if you ever connect back into what brought you to practice to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because it was actually like a lot of suffering that brought me to practice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Suffering. And then what about practice spoke to that?
Not taking it personally, having compassion for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing that the voices aren't my fault. Everybody has some.
Mm-hmm.
Seems
like all three or four of those things you just listed are very applicable right now, yeah?
Mm-hmm. So, like, it's not my fault that I'm having difficulty maintaining a meditation practice, and it's not personal that it's trying to discourage me from doing this.
Exactly.
Have compassion for myself that this is difficult.
Exactly. Huh. Exactly.
That one actually really speaks to me, yeah.
Yep. Because, of course, it's just so pernicious that it spirals around. So here's this person, in this case, Isabel, who, gosh knows why. I mean, we don't know why stuff like this happens, right? But just having a challenging time in practice and one by one having her practice commitments taken away from her. You know, this thing, practice, being something that's really important to her. And so little by little, that's getting eroded, and then come around the other side, and she gets blamed for that. And she gets the wrong person, and, you know, why isn't she blah, blah, blah. And so meanwhile, it's getting more and more difficult because she has fewer and fewer tools at her fingertips, and she's getting beaten more and more for it.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like there's no one on her side to just say, whoa. You know, instead of in a difficult situation being beaten, what we really need at that point, right, of course, is someone to just say, gosh, I'm sorry. That must be really hard.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You know, the word addiction is coming up for me right now.
That's interesting.
Yeah, like just the way you played that out, and like it's sort of, it gets us in a difficult space, and then it's like, but what you need is, yeah, and then we get kind of beaten down, and then I turn to more of the same thing because I'm beaten down and I can't get out of it, and it kind of spiral, like you said the word spiral. So it's,
yeah.
I've been looking at that lately about looking to conditioning and the conversation as kind of an addiction. It's like a way of not being present.
Yes.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
But I won't, yeah.
Well, and that's a great image for it, Isabel, because with addiction, that's exactly right, that it spirals down, and it takes a lot to break through that initial kind of, you know, if you use actual substance abuse addiction, that's a good image of it, where the body has to go through a very difficult, intense transition out of that addiction to begin to move in the other direction.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a good image for it. Like when it becomes that difficult in practice, it takes really kind of reaching down and calling on that faith, that trust, that whatever word would work for you there, knowing it's in there, that practice is what you want, and kind of turning to the love, the compassion, the mentor presence that knows this is okay. You know, that this is happening is okay. It doesn't mean anything about you. As you say, it's not personal. There's nothing, no one's done anything wrong.
Yeah. Okay. What you just said about, you know, knowing that, that love and that compassion is what I want, that really spoke to my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's somewhere for me to focus is,
mm-hmm.
yeah,
mm-hmm.
Getting back in touch with the one who wants to practice, or, yeah, that's not even quite the right way to say it, but, yeah, just that feeling that I want to be in, compassion.
Well, and to me, it's another way to talk about it would be just connecting back in with your authenticity, because that's what wants to practice. You know, your heart
mm-hmm.
wants who you really are. I mean, you are practice. That's who you really are. And there's this whole other campaign that's going on for you that goes on for all of us all the time of trying to convince you that you're this other thing, and we get confused. You know, we think, I'm this illusion of a separate self trying to survive over here, and it's painful to be that, to be identified with that. And so, go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, it's really painful.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It's incredibly painful to be identified with an illusion of a separate self. It really is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I perhaps because you used addiction, I just thought of I think from the 12 steps, they talk about just walk the steps, which to me
yes.
is the equivalent of just keep the commitment. So to me, in times like this, the thing we just have to do is just keep doing the next practice thing like you're doing. Call into the radio show, record and listen, you know, regardless of how much the voices will scream about, I don't know what form that takes for you. For me, it would be something like, this isn't working, or, you know, whatever. But just keep doing it. You know, rearrange your schedule and come on retreat. You know, do a whatever. Sign up for Modal Guidance. Everything that's offered, take it up on. Do the opportunity, because that's the thing that's going to shake it loose. That's the thing that's going to bring you back eventually to, this is what I really want.
Uh-huh. Okay. I am coming on retreat in August and signed up to do that. And then I've talked previously about doing making a change for good, and I haven't done that yet, like doing it again and talking with you again and hearing you say that about making the commitment. So I think that's, I want to try and set that structure up in place for myself, and then I can watch to see.
Yep.
But just to like make some commitments again.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know if you're aware of the Ansanga Market working under Sherry's direction. There are awareness coaches. And it would be
I've heard them.
a great thing for you right now to use that resource. So maybe with the Making a Change for Good, whatever your commitment is there, sign on with an awareness coach to help you walk through that process.
Great. Thank you for mentioning that. I heard it mentioned and I hadn't looked into it, so I'm going to go look into that right now.
Yeah. It's such a good reminder, Isabel. I'm really glad. Thanks for your courage for calling in to talk about it, because, you know, that thing of, well, getting talked out of it and whatever, I don't have all the excuses. These weren't some of the things you mentioned, but for folks in general, you know, well, I don't have time to come on retreat, or it's too hard, or it's too much money, or it's, you know, I can't do awareness practice in my day-to-day life because whatever. But to realize from what you're talking about today that this is our life. This is our, this is it. There can be nothing more important than this. We have to prioritize it because this is everything. Everything else, in a sense, comes after this. But, you know, being who we are, touching into our authenticity, being here in the moment, paying attention, which are all ways of saying practice, that's how we have a life at all. Without that, there's really nothing.
Yeah, otherwise it's quite painful.
Yeah, it is, because it was, I think, in a recent retreat, it made such a big impact on me. Sherry was talking about if we're not directing the attention, conditioned mind is. And it will direct the attention to suffering. That's just, I mean, that's what it does. In a way, you can't even, I mean, you can't take that personally. You can't even, you know, I mean, you can use that if you want, but it's just the way it is. Conditioned mind will direct the attention, and it directs it to suffering. And so we have to be the ones to choose to direct the attention so that we can actually have the life we want to have.
Great. Well, thank you, Jen. I will go to give someone else some time, but I will go look up those coaches right now.
Thank you, Isabel. I really appreciate you calling
in. Thank you.
Okay, take care.
Okay, bye.
Thanks for joining us, Isabel. You're listening to Open Air. Jen, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
Okay, great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Greta from Washington State.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is David calling from Hawaii.
This is Janet calling from New Hampshire.
Hi, this is Catherine from St. Louis.
Rebecca from Austin, Texas.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Anna here from Yorkshire in England.
It's Ramita calling from South Carolina.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Todd calling from Canada.
2012 marks 10 years that Sherry and Michael have been doing Open Air. They have fielded thousands of your calls and archived hundreds of shows. In this year of deepening practice, we invite you to give a donation to support Open Air. Go to the Living Compassion website, click on the Donations tab, and make a donation of any size to the Zen Center, writing Open Air in the notes field. Step forward to be part of expanding the transformation. Lend your support today.
We're very lucky people.
We are very lucky people.
See you next week.
See you next week.
Good night.
Good night.
You are the light of the world. You are the light of the world. So shine.
This beautiful song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to celebrate the unique light each of us brings to the world. Simply Celebrate wants to support you in living into that light, no matter where you are on the path, but especially when it's a little hard to see in the dark. With great gratitude to Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha, Simply Celebrate uses the practice as a foundation for everything we do. We offer coaching, books, and self-mentoring programs to help you find more joy, color, spontaneity, and connection, moment to moment. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
This is Scott from Porch Dog Software. Today we're talking with Lanny, one of Porch Dog's favorite clients. Lanny, what do you think Open Air listeners might want to know about working with Porch Dog?
Well, Scott, I think they might want to know that you write all kinds of software, for Macs and iPhones and iPads, and for all types of companies, big ones and small ones like mine. And you do your work with a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we love about Open Air is the energy and enthusiasm in every show. We try and get lit up about everything we do here at Porch Talk Software, too.
Everything?
Yep. Especially the things we don't like.
Sweet.
Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. Jen, we have another caller.
Great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Yay, I made it on. I can't believe it. Hi, this is Helen from Boston.
Hey, Helen.
And I am the one who has been doing a fundraiser for the Africa Project.
Okay.
The plan is I'm doing an Ironman this fall, an Ironman triathlon, which is a 2.4-mile swim, 112-mile bike, and then a marathon. So,
and this is all in one day?
Yes, we hope. We hope it'll be somewhere between 14 and 16 hours it'll take me. I'm having some knee issues, so I don't know. We'll see. But I, in a sort of insane moment, decided I was going to commit myself to raising $100 a mile, which is $14,000, which is...
Well, I'll tell you, I already want to give you all my money, so...
Well, you know, the thing is, it's so... I chose it because it was so big.
Yeah.
I mean, the Ironman is big. I did one 10 years ago. I just turned 50.
Wow.
I did one when I turned 40, but I've had a couple shoulder surgeries since then, and it's just 10 years of joint wear and tear. So it's a challenge, and I was having a hard time getting as motivated as I thought I wanted to be. And then I just, I thought, I'm going to do this for the Africa Project. And so it's been, oh my gosh, a huge practice opportunity in a whole lot of ways.
Again, when is the event?
Well, my race is actually in September.
Okay.
September 30th, and I'm raising money between now and then online. I'm on Razoo.com.
Okay.
And so I've raised about $2,000 so far.
Wow.
But the really big thing, and the reason I'm so excited I actually got on this week, is I am doing a fundraiser at the club where I work. I'm a personal trainer, and I work at a club that has a big, outdoor swimming pool, et cetera, facility. So I rented the club out, and I'm having a fundraiser. And that has been, it's been a practice opportunity. It's been big, and I've been running around. I thought I had some people to help me who, for different reasons, haven't been able to help me. But I've managed to, I think, get a lot of things together. I have some great silent auction items. I've got raffle items. I have a DJ who's volunteering her time. And now I'm nervous because I'm not sure anybody's going to come.
That's the next thing.
So I'm actually trying to tell everybody I know, and I wanted to put the word out to any Boston area sangha.
Okay.
Is in Weymouth. I don't know how best to post the info.
You know, it's a great question, Helen. I'll tell you what, why don't you send the info to africa@livingcompassion.org. Tell me again the date of
that
event.
The date of that is June 24th.
Okay.
So it's not next Sunday, Father's Day. It's the Sunday after.
Okay.
And it's going to be 6 to 9 cocktails outside by the pool if you get nice weather.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to be holding a raffle and a silent auction. And hopefully it'll be a lot of fun. I'm also putting together, I hope, some PowerPoint presentations just for people. I'm going to put them next to the line for the bar. They'll have to watch them.
Uh-huh.
But I got a monitor, and I'm going to try and set up some presentations about the project and really educate people about what's going on.
Great. So, well, I imagine you're going to talk all about the event that you're doing, the Ironman.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I thought originally it was about that, but it's becoming less about that.
Well, I'll tell you, just listening to you and hearing you lay out, you know, what you're going to be doing and the swim this much and run this much, I just go to this place of, wow, that is an inspiring commitment. That's an inspiring commitment. And if I were hearing that someone were willing to do that for a group of 800 children in Africa, I would want to support them. I would want to fund them. So,
well, that's what I hope.
Yeah,
you know,
I would encourage you to definitely mention, have that be a piece of, you know, kind of, just, because I think what it does is it demonstrates the depth of your commitment. And what I, in my experience, that's such a gift. Because, so in it's projection, basically, right? So as I listen to you talk about that commitment, I get to go to that place of commitment in myself.
Yeah.
And from that place of commitment, it feels so good, and I want to participate. So I just think that would be a beautiful thing to focus on in that evening, to talk about, you know, the event that you're doing and why you're doing it and all that.
Yeah. Well, it's really been fun talking to people about, you know, because I've had a lot of people ask me, well, why are you doing something for Africa? Why not here? And why not, you know, and just talking about how I first got involved. And I don't give a lot of money. I don't have a lot of money to give, but I read the blogs and I give what I can. And so I feel a part of it. And in fact, what got me, and I've shared it with a couple of people, there was a podcast of volunteers coming back from Africa and talking about feeding the kids, and it was the first time I think you'd given them peanut butter.
Okay.
And one of the volunteers talked about how none of them were finishing it, and she followed one girl out and watched her split her piece into six other pieces, and then she watched one of those girls split her piece. And it, at that moment, it just sort of caught my heart.
Boy, it's such a beautiful thing, isn't that? Yeah, just really touching.
It is.
Generosity and that sharing. Yeah.
That's the thing that just moves me. You know, especially, and it's funny, you were talking about food earlier. I mean, I work in a business, and I have issues around food, and I work with clients who have issues around food and excess. Mm-hmm. And there's so much around excess that we deal with, and I think that's why it just moved me so much to see someone who had nothing, who was sharing what they had. So I'm hoping I can get a lot of other people as, you know, as excited as I am.
Yes, yes, exactly. Well, it's definitely, it's contagious.
I hope so. Anyway, I'm not gonna. I could go on all night, but I did want to. I'll send you the info. But I wanted to put the word out. If there's anyone in the Boston area, I would love to have people come on down. I hope it'll be a really nice celebration.
Yeah, that's so. It's just so great, and I'm really, really glad. Thank you for calling and sharing it. And what I project in listening to you is that you get to have such a great experience of practice, of touching into your heart and what matters to you and what moves.
Oh, my gosh.
How do you do it?
And I've had so many roadblocks. And right now, as I'm talking to you, they don't seem important at all. Whereas a week ago, it's like, oh, my God. People are, you know.
Yeah.
It's been an amazing experience.
Yeah.
So I'm really grateful for what I've gotten out of this.
Yeah. It's so true, isn't it? Yeah. We all end up thanking, no, thank you, no, thank you, no, really, thank you.
Exactly.
A good deal is where everyone feels like they got the best end of the bargain, so it's kind of what this is
about. Yeah, well,
knows.
I think this is a good deal then.
Exactly.
Well, Thank you, Jen and Gusho, and thank you, Michael.
Yeah, I'm so glad you got on, and I'll look forward to receiving that information from you.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right,
bye-bye.
And you'll have to call us closer to the event, the other event also. You know, I'm headed over there in mid-July, and so I would love to, you know, I'm definitely going to tell them your story and what you're up to and all that, so if you have any specifics or photos or anything like that you want to send over, just let me know. All right,
Helen.
Did we lose her?
I think we've lost Helen.
Oh, okay.
Helen, thank you for joining us. I'm touched, moved, and inspired on this end of the phone also.
Oh, isn't that just so fun?
It's very fun.
Yeah.
Very.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
And we have another caller here, Jen.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself? Next caller, are you there? Okay, moving right along. Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself? Oh, that phone line just dropped.
Oh, I wonder if we're having a technical issue.
I don't know. I think number three is going to be lucky here.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Michael. Hey, Jen. This is David calling.
Hey, David.
Hi.
Hi. Third caller. I was lucky. I didn't think I was going to get off the phone.
Okay.
Can you hear me okay?
I can. Yeah. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can. Sometimes it gets in that tunnel when I'm calling in, so I just wanted to double check before we get started.
You sound clear.
Okay, super, super. Well, I don't really have anything huge. I was actually just calling, much like Jen and the first caller, to just participate, really. And I was totally inspired by the conversation that you had with Alex, and also kind of can attest to what Rochelle was pointing out with how much that, you know, the experience of, you know, eating at the monastery and participating in that way can be brought, that practice can be brought to everyday life, you know, where we live.
Yeah, both on the content and the process level.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
Both on the content and the process level. That's a really good point.
You know, as an aside, David, that this keeps coming up for me. I keep forgetting to say it, that one of the things that I marvel at is that the menu we currently have essentially has zero sugar in it. I mean, very, very close to no sugar at all.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's very unusual for the average American. And yet not, and at the end of a retreat, we have an evaluation form that we ask folks to fill out just to help us with, you know, are there things we can improve or that sort of thing. And one of the categories on there is food, and not a single person has mentioned the lack of sugar.
Right, right,
Oh, it moved me because
it's
so easy to be addicted to sugar and to want that and to crave that. And I think, you know, Rochelle pointed at it, that you don't, because the food is so beautifully cared for. And, you know, to the credit of people who are here on retreat, I mean, you could be unconscious to anything, so you could not realize that, right? But the awareness and presence that people are bringing to the food and therefore really tasting it and enjoying it is a huge piece of it as well.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. I mean, when you were talking about that, it was also occurring to me that, you know, it extends, so that food piece of it, kind of, which is the content that I think you were pointing at, and then that care and that attention, the kind of feeling of being looked after, not just while I'm eating if I'm on retreat, but when being at the monastery is set up in just so much support on a process level that by the time I move in, you know, the eating aspect of it, there's, you know, they are kind of, to the extent they are, have already been looked at and cared for, and I wouldn't necessarily kind of need to kind of be looking for something sweet or, you know, whatever it is, meet some essential need that is really kind of getting met.
Yeah, boy, that's really, really true. And how often I think we don't realize in our lives that that's what we're doing. We're reaching for something like sugar to meet an unmet need.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually in the middle of a 30-day Making a Change for Good retreat right now myself.
Uh-huh.
And actually today is day 12 for me, so it's Appreciation Day. And
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah, this is a perfect, you know, kind of way to express that. But, you know, it's true. You know, I've chosen to kind of eliminate two things in my life. I've chosen to add two different things as well, but the things that I've eliminated were basically things that I had identified that were playing that role that I think were playing in my life. So there's kind of essential needs going on. I kind of, you know, kind of have a vague idea that they're not getting met, and all of getting them, the energy and the attention, gets off into these two other activities that, yeah, probably may survive childhood to the extent they did, but are really just in that role of kind of, you know, reaching for something outside of me, i.e. the sugar, that is, you know, kind of reputedly going to take care of these needs, but of course never does.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're breaking up a tiny bit, David, so let me reflect and just to make sure I'm with you and kind of for other folks who may not have heard you.
Okay.
So that in this 30-day retreat, one of the things you've chosen is to eliminate a couple things that feel like they're in this category of that there's this essential need that's not really getting met, kind of at the base level, and that you're reaching for these other things as a way to kind of take the edge off to sort of meet the need as best you can. But it sounds like experimenting with what would it be like to not go to those, whatever it is, behaviors or substances or things, and then just see what happens without those, you know, reaching for those things to attempt to meet the need.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
That's a really fun experiment.
Yeah, and it's, so much comes up, you know, and of course within the context, and you'll jump in if I'm breaking up again, yeah. Okay, so within the context of the 30-day retreat, in the Making a Change for Good, there's the daily evening review, so there's always a chance to check in. You know, I eliminate these two things that forever have been kind of the things that have, you know, eased over the rough edges. You know, whenever there's a, I might get a chance to see what conditioning is up to, I reach for one of these things, and the system stays in place.
Wow.
Eliminating them, all that stuff is coming up.
Yeah.
And, you know, there needs to be a support in place to kind of deal with all of that, you know, the anxiety or the angst or whatever, you know, the voices are saying, or really kind of just all of, an actual fact, all of that energy that is being released kind of through the sensations in the body.
Yeah.
And the retreat is, along with, you know, recording and listening and a lot of other things, is just such a great support.
Mm. Boy, I just think that's very, very wise what you said, and I want to underline it. That so it occurred to you that here are these things that you're reaching for to take the edge off. It occurs to you to not do that, to see what would happen if I didn't reach for those things. But the wisdom of, but I'm going to need a support system in place to do that. But how unkind it would be to sort of snatch it away, in a sense, from the part of you who's reaching it. You know, it's like just like when we're little kids. So we have these needs, but we're little. We have no ability to meet the need ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We do whatever we can in our little kid way to try to meet the need. And, you know, I mean, we do the best we can. But in this scenario, it's like what you're doing is you're removing the thing that you reach for to try to meet the need, but at the same time, you're coming around to at least to the best of your ability to actually meet the need instead of just sort of ripping it out from under the little guy who's reaching for to try to get his need met. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, I think yes. I mean, in the sense that it would be an unkindness. There isn't a whole lot of compassion to kind of rip out this support system without then stepping forward to be that which can actually meet those needs.
Exactly. Exactly. And maybe when you set out on the experiment, you don't know exactly what the need is necessarily or how you're going to go about meeting it. but that's a critical piece of the project, that you have the supports in place and that you're at a place in your practice where you're ready to do that.
Jen?
Are you still there, Michael?
Yeah, I just came back on. I just was muted and unmuted. So,
okay.
Yeah, it is. It is it's a critical place of practice. And, you know, the three things that occurred to me in terms of support with that, one is, you know, just the 30-day retreat itself and being able to do that review each night, kind of the check-in.
Mm-hmm.
The second is, you know, the recording and listening, which
mm-hmm.
is
exactly.
so crucial, you know, with the reassurances. And then the third piece that I had put in to right off the bat is I knew that there's so much energy with that, all the sensations. So in eliminating two of those things which kind of promise but don't deliver, I also added two activities to take their place.
Mm.
And one of them is finding two new forms of exercise each week.
Wow.
And so the whole system is kind of working together. It's like I'll pull these two things out that were the kind of the, if you will, the, you know, conditioned crutches.
Yep.
Watch everything that arises.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the same time, move into a place where the kind of little people who were kind of caught in all this are going to have all the support that I could, you know, possibly kind of create, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's really a perfect system. Yep. Taking away the crutches and adding in what's truly going to, potentially truly going to meet the need.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then, of course, within all of that, just simply not holding like an expectation or a belief or an agenda
yep.
that, you know, this is how it's done and then I'm going to be fixed and I'll never feel these ways again. You know, not getting caught up in that whole side of it, but just kind of experimenting, just kind of, you know, going in and having some fun with it and realizing that it's going to be, you know, get knocked down and get back up again and at least there's some support in there.
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, the spirit of inquiry, right? We've been talking about
yeah.
it so much in practice lately, and bringing that lightness to it. You said, you know, having fun with it, you know, not
mm-hmm.
making it so serious and putting a bunch of standards and, as you say, from now on, and I'm going to get fixed, and I'm not going to do these things anymore, and now I'm going to do only the good things. You know, it's not about
right.
that. It's
no.
about I'm projecting. This thing occurred to you, you know, just life drops in this idea, and how fun. Let's just see. Let's just see for a month what happens.
Yeah, yeah, exactly,
yeah.
exactly.
Yeah, and then from that place, so often, with that lightness, with that just spirit of inquiry, if we decide that there's really sort of a permanent, that's not a great word for it, but a real change we want to make in our lives, it comes from a place of wanting to do it, not from a place of I should do this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really a great point with it. It just kind of organically arises without the efforting or the striving or the
yeah.
kind of, you know, militant self-discipline with it or, you know, all that. It's just, it's there, and if the change feels like it's in alignment with the heart, kind of life,
yeah.
you know, life makes that change for us.
That's right. Yep. And life supports us in keeping that commitment, and off we go. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Very fun.
Well, thanks, David.
Thank you so much, Jen.
All right. Take
okay.
care.
Okay. You too.
Good night.
Bye now. Aloha.
Thanks for joining us, David. You've been listening to Open Air. Jen, it's been a lot of fun having you with us tonight.
It's been a pleasure, Michael.
It's
being on the show now and having it hosted since I've
yes.
on Thursday nights I'm the host, so it's very relaxing to have you doing all the behind-the-scenes technical stuff, so thank you for that.
Good. Oh, you're very welcome. You're very welcome. It's a real privilege and a lot of fun to participate in this.
Oh, it is, isn't it? Yep.
Yep, that's great.
Thanks for your commitment.
Thank you.
All right.
Talk to you soon.
All right. Good night.
Good night.